I'd now like to welcome Matthew Perry from the CSIRO in Australia, also giving a talk on aerosols and their relation to solar PV. Thank
you. So, yeah, I'm going to talk about attenuation of solar radiance and PV power by smoke, aerosol and cloud events. So, as we've heard this week, forecasting of solar irradiance is a key issue for the effective management of PV power installations. And reductions in solar power are caused mainly by clouds, but also by aerosols. So I'm going to cover two studies which I've carried out recently. Firstly, looking at understanding the impact of smoke aerosols on solar irradiance. And in order to look at this, a well-monitored fire burn event was studied and also looked at the effect on spectral irradiance in order to assess the impact on PV power from different materials. And the other part is looking at short-term forecasting of reductions in irradiance due to clouds, looking at the addition of cloud information and how this has the potential to increase the accuracy of short-term forecasts of solar irradiance using SkyCam images and LiDAR ceilometer as potential sources of cloud data. So the data comes from the solar monitoring lab at Black Mountain in Canberra. You can see there the tracking solar irradiance. Pressed the wrong button again. Okay. Tracking solar irradiance up there. And there's the spectroradiometer on the right there, the ceilometer, and the sky camera, and there's eight solar PV panels as well. So we've got the fire burn study. The controlled burns took place less than 1 kilometre from the solar monitoring lab on a clear afternoon in March, and the development of the smoke plume was observed using SkyCam images. There's also a photo there showing the plume, and the SkyCam image there shows that the smoke was covering the sun as the late in the day there. And used a comparison with two other clear sky days to assess the effect on the monitored irradiance and PV power. So also looking at the effect on the aerosol optical depth using a nearby sun photometer from the AeroNet network showed that the AOD was elevated from background levels of 0.05 to 0.25 during the afternoon. And the effect on direct and global irradiance was a 9% reduction in direct irradiance over a 140-minute period during the event, and a peak reduction of 32%, or 192 watts per meter squared. So you can see, which is the button for the... Oh, I keep pressing the wrong button for the... Oh, that's the pointer, yeah. Okay. So, yeah, those are the reductions due to the smoke here, and it increases towards the sunset there. And they have a different character to these reductions due to the clouds earlier in the day. And the global irradiance on the bottom left there, there's a 6.5% reduction in that over the event, with a peak reduction of 26%. And that's a bit less because there was a slight increase in diffuse irradiance due to the scattering caused by the smoke. So looking at the spectral irradiance, the greatest reduction due to smoke occurred in the visible wavelength range around here. And looking at the ratio of smoky to clear days, that reached a minimum down there at 450 nanometers minimum ratio of 0.89, an 11% reduction. So looking at the spectral response of different PV technologies, this plot there shows the spectral response of six different materials used to make PV panels, and that's taken from a book chapter by Stoffel. And I applied that to the smoky clear ratio of spectral irradiance from the last slide, and that showed that the gallium arsenide and amorphous silicon materials have the great are most affected by the smoke, with ratios of 0.91. But the single crystalline silicon, which was used in this study, has the least effect of the smoke. So there was a 7% reduction in PV power in this case due to the smoke, and a peak reduction of 27% or 51 watts. So just to summarize this part, we can see that such changes could have implications for grid integration. And these results provide a clear illustration of the potential impact of a smoke event on PV production, although this relatively minor event may not be typical. And this has been published in Solar Energy Journal earlier this year. So going on to the other part, looking at short-term forecasting with added cloud data. Current methods for solar forecasting at short time scales of up to 30 minutes often use statistical techniques based on past values of the forecast variable. And recent research into the use of sky cameras has led to advances in forecasting the timing of cloud events. And the LIDAR ceilometer is another potential source of cloud information, with its backscatter through the atmosphere up to 8,000 meters. So this work aims to assess the potential of these cloud data sources in improving the accuracy of short-term solar forecasts. So the aim is to predict global irradiance, which is converted to clear sky index using the Inochin-Perez model. And the data covers a 10-month period from January to October 2014. And it's at 1 minute resolution, with a total of 68,000 observations after missing data and nighttime observations are removed. So the predictors include the past values of the clear sky index itself, which are averaged over 5 minute periods over the past half an hour. And the SkyCam methods, which was presented by Sam West, his work generates a forecast of the fraction of the cloud covering the sun. And I've got that forecast with lead times of 5, 10, and 15 minutes as predictors, as well as the backscatter intensity summed over the entire height range and averaged over a 1 hour period prior to the forecast lead time, and also split into the surface layer, which is the lowest 100 meters, and low layers below 2,000 meters. So, the top plots there just show that the good relationship with past values of the clear sky index, but it also shows the situations where it hasn't produced a good forecast, obviously, because there's no cloud information there. Where there's been a change in conditions, the top left one is a 10-minute lead time, and the top right is a 20-minute lead time. And the bottom left shows the relationship between with the SkyCam forecast cloud fraction, which is a weak negative relationship. So it looks like a lot of scatter there, but there is some information there with some skill. and the top bottom right shows the backscatter intensity, which has a slightly stronger negative relationship. So I employed a tenfold cross-validation strategy to avoid overfitting and calculate the error statistics which test predictive power, and used a random forest model with 200 trees. So these error statistics show 10-minute lead time, and basically the main result, the first two lines show just using the cloud information on its own, and then the third line there is just using the past values of Clear Sky Index, sort of the persistence model, and the fourth line shows a slight improvement in adding in the cloud information into the persistence model. Adding in the SkyCam forecast cloud fraction gives a reduction in the error of a few percent, about 2 or 3%. But adding in the backscatter data to the persistence model didn't reduce the error, although in the linear model they were significant predictors. That was only slightly worse. So basically looking at an example there for one particular day which had intermittent cloud conditions, looking at a 10-minute lead time again. The bars there at the bottom show the difference in absolute error between the cloud added model and the persistence model. So in some cases the cloud increases the error and in some cases it reduces it, but the overall effect is a slight reduction in the error, but the forecasts tend to give values between the two extremes of clear and cloudy during the intermittent period. So, I think that's all I want to... I'll just conclude by saying that past values of the forecast quantity are the most important predictors of future values as expected, but the results show that using the SkyCam-derived forecasts can increase the forecast accuracy by a few percent at lead times of 5 to 15 minutes. But there's potential to improve on this due to ongoing improvements in the SkyCam methods.
Thank you very much, Matthew. Let's thank the speaker. Do we have any questions? I'd like to invite you to meet our people in Singapore, Matthew. We suffer from fairly intense smoke haze events once or twice a year in Singapore that are very high altitude, but they can persist for a few weeks and have a significant impact. We've done similar studies to yours, but you might like to have a look at our data as well.
Oh, yeah, that'd be interesting.
No questions? Okay, then. Let's thank the speaker again, and we can save some time.